You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Okay, that is really loud, but I turned it down way too low. The truth tweaks lows in my soul and brings peaks, unfolds me like clean sheets. Tell me a story, it's bedtime, and fabric soft and rhymes like sweet dreams.
This track is called No Name, it's from never been so fond of a bond with the rotation. Just cozied up with the record, the lavender co-host
matches the artwork on the work that made me respect her. Audio sweet nectar, listening to it stripping. You question heaven's existing. I got a free shipping. Channels Billy while rhyming. I sit sipping my 20 ounce of minty divine. She gets a plenty, she mentors, makes me her mentee. She fresh enough to be minty. Who criminal, how she gets me from lyrically, incidentally, on soft beats, authentic, she do a thing independently, and this is what it meant to me.
Two tickets to a no-name show, two tickets to a no-name show. Broke boy this week, but I got good taste, though. Can I get two tickets to a no-name show, two tickets to a no-name show? Broke boy this week, but I got good taste, though. Songs independent, so it's vital. On my Twitter feed, dreamt about a copy on vinyl. It's a limited edition. I can't make a purchase because I need my wife's permission, and she says it isn't worth
how
it because I'm
you
on a plan. Rhyme an educator, spit the fiber like the high five, stream it on the Wi-Fi, thinking that she made
that's,
the shot right
cold.
Since she dropped
that's
when
cold.
I heard the ditty bop.
Put her record at the top.
Next to Tribe Common Sense, Black Star, Aquemini. Every song is hella fly when the days go by. I've got a soundtrack, proud, hope she flex a triple plat. She's the best in my opinion. My opinion's triple
all right,
fast.
So,
all of that. She's a sing-along,
okay,
the one right, I want right, to bring right, along right, the coffee. All right,
all right. I played 50% of his song. That's enough of the beer that he bought me. All right. Welcome to Low Key Wall number 05. I'm here with you. My name's Harry. I'll be your host for this evening. Yeah. That's my wife you're talking about. Okay. Careful. Like I said, she hunts people down in CSGO and she's just nice people. She doesn't look like she's really good, but she's only good with the knife, and she will knife you in the face. In Street Fighter. But yeah, so that song was from the No Name Show by Joe Ruiz. He found his stuff on Bandcamp. I'm going to put the link in the chat room for everybody that wants to go and pick up Joe's stuff. Okay. And let's see, last night we spent most of the night, we stayed up all night listening to the beautiful speech from President Donald Trump when he was doing the State of the Union. We discussed that yesterday, and tonight we're going to discuss some other stuff, some cool articles that I have found around, stuff that I thought was pretty cool that would probably not make it up the snuff to the for like a Tuesday or Thursday show for We Are Libertarians, and that brings you, you know, Low Key Wall. Or I try to interact with the chat room, and I interact with people that want to jump in on Discord. But most people jump in on Discord, I keep getting the same too, but everyone else, you know, if you're in the Discord, and you know, up level high enough, and you want to jump into the chat room while I'm doing this, come ahead, jump in, it's fun. As long as it doesn't get abused. If it does, you know, that's why I've got Ryan Holden. Eskajah, can you pronounce your name for us, please? Say hi to everybody.
It's Eskalja.
Alright. Eskalja. Eskalja.
Yes. Hello, everybody.
Thanks, Eskalja.
It's not really hard.
Yes, it is. Okay? It is hard. Okay? And that's the voice you're listening to is Reinhold. Reinhold, say hi.
Good evening, everybody.
Yep. And so, welcome to the Low Key Wall, which is, you know, like I said, like it's like lot. I like to do a lot of chat interaction. I only turn my thing off because my wife's moving back and forth, so you know, give her a little privacy as I'm upstairs doing it right now. All right, let's see. Farkas Nugent, don't know if I'm high enough. Yeah, it's honestly, like, I really do like Joe Ruiz's music. He produces a lot. He sends me a bunch of stuff that I like to critique on and send it back to him. He's the one that made the I don't know if you're a real OG listener. Joey made that song. This is weirdly
bad spell.
Huh? Are you gonna sing it for us? Eskalja? Eskalja, are you gonna sing it for us?
Wasn't the title of the song Bad Spell?
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Yeah. Like, are you gonna Bad Spell? Well, that was made by a different local artist.
Okay.
It was a different one. Are you going to sing us the other song for us? Let's go there.
I don't remember that at all.
You don't remember?
I just remember that.
Fine. It was a. I don't know if I can find it on SoundCloud. I'll look here on SoundCloud if I can find it. But it was a really cool song. And he basically like put everyone's no high enough level for mic access. Oh, okay. So you've got to have certain. You know, you've got to be so high to be able to get on the mic. Understandable. But you know, me personally, you know, I don't need. I forgot to, this is why I hate Twitter. You make one awful comment and people you never met before in the world just start tweeting at you. And they get really mad, especially if you're an egg account. But anyways, quick thing, alright, so let's get into the news a bit before we go off to this, like, because... You know, I kind of want to play with the format a little. I was talking to some people in the Discord. I thought about, you know, possibly, like, adding a after show to this thing where we just can sit around and, you know, just sort of encourage more articles being sent in either through the, in the chat room or just more participation from Discord. But, the Maxine Waters thing on BET, I think, Ryan Hall, you said that's going to be at 10 o'clock?
Yeah, that's what I read last night. It was going to be at 10 o'clock tonight.
Okay, all right. I don't want to sit through that. I don't want to watch that. But if we get 1,000 bits tonight, I'll sit through and watch that. But other than that, I don't know if I want to watch any more BET. We watched enough of it last night. All right. So I think... So first thing we're going to get to is the... what I think... I like seeing it as the death spiral of... Facebook, and them attacking people who get on the platform and try to do things and try to get to some reach, because that's which originally what a lot of people used. They used the face tubes for, and they're realizing, yeah, they really can't anymore. It created with a 4.7 million Facebook followers says her reach has been decimated on the platform, and she fears Instagram is next. All right, first things first, let's research the word decimate. It's to kill or destroy, remove a large percentage of, or kill one in every 10. So, she only lost 10%. That's not bad, but we know what they mean. They meant to completely remove or destroy, so, but we won't nitpick this article that much. On the platform, she fears Instagram is next. Justin Nagiri is a cosplayer with millions of followers across various social media platforms. She has 4.7 million followers on Facebook, and she has been reached on the platform to get decimated. Justin Nagiri is one of the top cosplayers in the world with millions of social followers across various platforms. But during a recent wide-ranging interview about her new documentary, Nagiri told Business Insider that when it comes to helping her business, not all social platforms were created equal. Like many creators on online publishers, Nagiri has felt the pain of Facebook algorithm shifts over the past year, especially in reach, a metric that refers to how many people see posts from a page. Hey, quick question. How many of you guys can actually hear Gunther in the background? Because she sounds like she's in my ear. Of course, I try to get quiet so I can hear, and she gets killed. Anyways, back to this. You know, comment if you guys can hear. The echoes through the broad changes observed by online publishers, which saw Google overtake Facebook as the largest source of referral traffic last summer. Nagiri said Facebook emphasis on video last year worked for a while to boost reach, but that it then began to fall off. I have noticed that videos in general are receiving less reach than usual, she said, and it's concerning because a lot of people depend on social media to showcase their work and reach new audiences. Nagiri said it was too early to understand how the latest Facebook news feed shift announced earlier this month would affect her. So we've been noticing like this massive like Facebook shift. Dear Leader has talked about it. The whole like pages things are becoming more relevant. We even seen in our own Facebook pages we're starting to get low traffic on it, even though there's thousands of people on it. We get low traffic on it, and the shift has been trying to get moving people to groups. But we went to groups a while back because of the whole, you know, it was easier to talk to people to share memes when the feed was so big. So we went to groups a while back. But even then, Facebook's still attacking like small creators unless you pay them. So that's why we've been starting to try to like diversify, go to different platforms to be able to get with people. So that's another reason why here on Twitch, Twitch-like streamers, YouTube. YouTube's taking video, but even YouTube starts going after people. But we're going, you know, we did have a vid.me account before vid.me shut down. And all you're like, I knew you guys were on vid.me. Exactly. Thanks, people. Thanks, people. We had one, though, and there's video, and there were videos on it. But it's like I said, it's like a just-in-case thing. So, yeah, which stinks, but it goes to show you that you cannot depend on anyone's platform unless you've created it. Even when it comes to, like, because if you had a virtual private server, or you did everything, you hosted yourself on your own server, if the cloud server went down, you can just move to A, to another cloud server, and redirect your domain that you owned, or boot up your own server at the house and direct your domain down to that. Now, not just saying, like, but hey, you're on Twitch. Yes, I am. But, you know, at the same time, I'm still working on, in the background, I'm trying to get on a little small Docker, just so if push comes to shove, if Dear Leader came to me saying, like, hey, we're getting locked out of this, we're locked out of doing that, I want to be able to ability just to crack a beer, call up every tech that we have here, you know, that listens to Wall, to help me, like, you know, like, get everything to switch over into our own server that night. And we just sit there and do that. I'd rather do that than sit there, panic, and come up with a new move. So that's what we plan on doing. All right. Still can't figure. Christy just posted in the chat. Still can't figure out why I'm not getting sound on the laptop. Arg. I don't know why you're not getting sound on your laptop. Sure, you got everything updated. Could be that. I don't have things updated. Or maybe you just need to bring your laptop to next Liberty and chill, that you can make it, and then we'll take a look at it. So, next time you're in Indy, just bring it to Liberty and chill, and I'll take a look at it. Let's see here. So, yeah. Escalja, Reinhold, you got anything to say about this before we move on? I know this is like a life fluffy piece, but to me, it's like, it's, you know, it's in the realm of stuff that we do here on Facebook and stuff like that, so I kind of wanted to talk about
it. Well, I mean, so Every platform that ever existed is always runs into these possible issues. So you have increases in reaches, decreases in reaches. You look at MySpace. You can go back and look at broadcast television. You can look at newspapers, right? They all go through these highs and lows. So you always have to be careful of where you're going out and reaching your audience from.
Yeah.
You have to pay attention to that, and you have to diversify. If you're not diversified, you're going to get locked into a single medium, broadcast medium. And you're going to end up being at the whims of that business model. So if Facebook does something that really angers a lot of people and everybody leaves Facebook, and then that's where you're doing all of your social media and all of your broadcasting from, you're going to take the hit of their decision. So you have to always be able to identify where those trends are going, stay on top of it, and keep yourself diversified so you don't fall into that trap.
And that's why, like, the email, the We Are Libertarians email list is very important, because, you know, like I said, like, email is very federated. We can send out an email from anywhere, like to the RSS feed. You can get it, as long as the RSS feed works out there, we can set, you know, you can pick it up at any pod feed catcher. I think podcasts are pretty much sort of insulated from some of the social media aspect of it, because, like, most people who listen to podcasts, they listen to it, you know, most of the people don't listen to live. Like, I wasn't too sure, like, this Twitch would go, because most people who listen to podcasts don't watch things live. They like to listen to podcasts. Like, majority of people who are going to listen to these words that we're talking right now are probably going to listen to it probably, like, 8 to 12 hours from now, and they're going to be doing something else, not live. So podcasters a little insulated from it, but, you know, we're not all the way, because, you know, sometimes we do like to do live content. That's why, like, the Discord is good, because the Discord, like, it announces and shouts to people, like, hey, we are going live, you know? It tells people, you know? Alright, moving on to the next article. Electronic Frontier Foundation. Local communities can inject desperately needed competition in the ISP market. Sometimes I'm not happy with a lot of stuff the EFS post. This one kind of got me, I will say, spoiler on this whole article before we go through it, wishy-washy. I'm kind of wishy-washy on this one, like, half I like it, but like, oh, you're just not really, you didn't want to go full bore, did you? But anyways, local communities can inject desperately needed competition in the ISP market. Now, which I first read that title, I was like, this is awesome! People getting together, going after the big ISP company.
Finally, ZFF finally figuring out that maybe net neutrality is not a great thing?
Yep.
I mean, that's what the title sounds like.
Oh, right.
I got a feeling that they're not there all the way, right?
Well, let's go through the article. I don't have too many spoilers. Kristen, we played it in the beginning. We'll play it in the... You know what? We will play it again. I will play it again for Joe. For you, Christy. I will play it again, but not right now. If I have to get up and go to the bathroom, I will play it. If I have to go in the bathroom. Or we have to do a... You know... Or I'll play it after the commercial break. That's a joke. You guys are supposed to laugh at the laugh. There's no commercials. All right, awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Anyways, last year we witnessed the elimination of critical privacy and network neutrality protections in the broadband market, but these moves would be less dangerous if we were able to vote with our wallets and choose a provider that respected our privacy and didn't engage in unfair data discrimination. Unfortunately, most of us have only one choice for high-speed internet. If Comcast behaves badly, we can complain, but we can't hit them where it really hurts by switching to someone else. Thanks, Farkas.
They get it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're actually stating the whole argument against net neutrality in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Right in front. I'm surprised.
Keep that optimism.
It's a new day. We can all celebrate.
Keep.
I got a feeling this is going to bite me in the ass, isn't it?
Just the other cheek, though. It'll bite you in the other cheek. How about that? That'll help you. That'll probably soften the blow a little. The good news, communities across the country are trying to fix that by developing their own community broadband network, and some members of Congress trying to help. Led by Congresswoman Eshoo, Congress recently introduced H.R. 4814, the Community Broadband Act of 2018, to empower local citizens to explore community broadband as a means to induce competition and lower prices. In particular, the bill tackles barriers raised by laws in more than 20 states that prevent local communities from building their own networks. If the bill passes, it could clear the way for an explosion of new experimentation. While not all community broadband efforts have flourished, several markets that have embraced community broadband options have succeeded in offering faster and cheaper broadband access. For example, Chattanooga, Tennessee, long ago deployed a community broadband network from the local utility after they found they were being left behind in digital age. Today, the people of the city pay $70 a month for symmetrical gigabit service, which is comparable to many Google Fiber markets. And while it may not make sense in every community, denying people the opportunity to explore the option in its entirety effectively greenlights the local monopoly to engage in anti-consumer conduct. In EFS's own backyard, San Francisco, the local government is actively exploring building its own fiber optic platform for all comers to sell broadband access to its citizens, and it has proactively committed to supporting network neutrality and user privacy. The city's feasibility and economic analysis estimates it can make high-speed broadband available to all of its residents and affordable to all income levels. If successful, it could be modeled for many other major cities. Community broadband might not be a household term yet, but then neither was net neutrality just a few years ago. We're thrilled to see lawmakers, city officials, and ordinary citizens take up the cause. Community broadband isn't a complete solution to the FCC decision to abandon its role in protecting net neutrality or Congress's outrageous decision to gut consumer privacy, but it's a good start. Like I said, it's the other cheek that bit you in.
Okay.
Yep. Guess what? Well, all right. Paul, let you go first.
So my biggest complaint here really is the full-throated endorsement of the San Francisco plan, because you can make something like a community broadband affordable, but you're going to be pilfering the taxpayer on the other end of things in order to support that. The only way I would endorse a plan like that were to be happening here in Indianapolis is if it were made to be self-funding.
Hmm.
And if you make it self-funding, then all you just created was another company.
Exactly. But can a government actually create a real, a true, like, a self, like, funding project? Have they ever done anything like that?
Well, see, that's the problem. The moment it starts to head under, or it has a bad quarter operating, they throw money from other slush funds at it. And, you know, Comcast, Spectrum, you know, Time Warner is now Spectrum, but whatever. They don't have the luxury of, you know, oh yeah, well, we were a little bit behind on our earnings. We're just gonna dip into the property tax slush fund, or, you know, let's just maneuver some money from the road spending over here and patch that hole.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have that opportunity. But the other thing I dislike about the whole thing, right, if you like get into it, right, is the simple fact that it's like, it is going to be, yeah, it's going to be that government funding with it, right? And that their biggest plan to this thing is like, it's going to be gigabit, and they're going to run copper cable, not copper, but like, so like fiber optic cable to all these, like to everyone's house. This sounds outrageously expensive. Will it be helpful? Yeah, but what's the point? Wouldn't it be better just to get cash, sit on it, wait to, I don't know, the 5G mark, the fifth generation of, for like what 5G LTE comes out, and just use that instead? And just lower the rules. But the other thing is, it's like the understanding, like a lot of the issues that we're having with ISPs it's not from knowledge or money, it's more of governments just standing in the way. Because, you know, they're like, we're going to build all this so other companies can come in and do it. It's like, okay, well, why can't you just, you know, get other things out of the way and just let companies build the whole thing, you know?
But, and I think that some communities are going to do that. So what I like about this article in the kind of the direction you're going is that they're realizing that there is, the real problem is lack of competition, right? So I know the city of Anderson is doing that, where they do broadband for the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
As an alternative to, and it's wireless broadband, right? So it's Wi-Fi basically for everybody in the city. They put up hotspots all over the city, right? So there's that type of thing. And where I live at, there's a co-op. Now, it's a privately owned co-op, which is, I think, is the most optimal way of doing this stuff, where the private organization owns all the wires and ran all the cables.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a member and getting service, you're part owner of the company, as it were. So you can demand good service all the time. You're going to get more response for everything you do. I get great service. I get whenever I need anything, I just call them up and it's taken care of. The question is that at least this is getting people talking about the right issue, not trying to force this all down as a nationwide solution, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which is better, because then you can just create solutions that each small individual market needs, instead of this is what the nation is getting, and this is what everyone's getting. Deal with it and just move on.
The thing that it says in the article, it says we need competition, or we need experimentation, mm-hmm. to find the best solution.
Right.
Open up that experimentation. You're going to find through experimentation. We all know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. The experimentation is going to provide that the best solution is going to be private industry doing this.
Yep.
Every time.
Yep. Well, like the other places, like like here in Indy, there's tons of dark fiber everywhere, which people can tap into, and not people, I get that wrong, like people that can tap in. No, yes and no, people can tap into it. I never should went down this rabbit hole. But there's fiber optic cables like all littered all the way through like a lot of places in Indianapolis, especially in this side of town going up to Fort Bend, where I live. So it's... And AT&T did a good job because they were getting some competition for it, because they were running DSL service to the fiber. They were creating small fiber point junction boxes, or is that what they called? No, it's not junction boxes. What are they in a DSL? Oh, crap, baskets.
Well, they're access points. I just don't remember what they're called.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called. Yeah, they're basically access for the DSL. And your speed is based on how far you're away from this thing. So they just started building many of them across this fiber line up to, you know, up to the main hub. So you basically, it's like, how are you on DSL access? Because, like, I'm on DSL till it gets, like, down my block, and then it hits fiber. So basically, instead of just running fiber to my house, I have a... I have a DSL line, but it's a solid DSL line because it only goes half a block down the street, and I'm on and I'm back on fiber. Yeah, it is. But to me, it worked for me. The speed I does, I needed a business line when I first got it. I don't need it anymore. I needed the up. I needed the down from it. Comcast wouldn't give me a business line, and AT&T would. So that's why I have my DSL line. And I got the
I know. I got a brother-in-law who's living in an area of Indiana where he's like 2 miles away from the nearest DSL point. He can't get fiber, can't get wireless. I mean, he has no internet connectivity. The only thing he can do is like buy a 4G hotspot and use that for his internet connection.
Ouch. Yeah, that's understandable because like
a month, and if you try to watch any video, you situation. So he's able to find, he found an unlimited, you know, 4G, and he's paying them for that. So he's able to get it now, but on a like a grandfather plan that he had from something else. But he got lucky there. But that's the thing, is that because there's a law in that area that's limiting anybody from coming in and giving him the protected, I think it's AT&T in his area. Right, so AT&T doesn't see the need to go out there and give him service, so he's screwed. We need competition to get to those people.
Oh yeah. Let's see. I just got 5 bits from Dookie Twinkle. Thanks, Dookie Twinkle. Thanks for the bits. You can if you usually type in just cheer, and then you can just put 5, and you don't have to put cheer 5 times. You just go cheer and the numeral 5 right next to it. Take up that 1 and put it in 5, and then it'll come in as like 1, 5 or whatever number of cheer you want to give. But I do.
You know. No, we need as much spam as possible.
Yeah, people like to spam the ones, man. That makes it all splashy.
Just gotta make it rain.
Gotta make it wane. It's okay. I'm just, you know, when I was first doing, I had to learn how to do bits when I first came over here to Twitch.
That's the thing I understand is a lot is people are like, well, I don't know this. I'm trying to learn it. Of course you are. Everybody is always trying to learn everything.
Yep.
That's our human experience. And when people start acting like, well, you should know this by now, or you should, they didn't know it at one point. They had to learn it. So they need to get off that. It's ridiculous attitude that is really starting to annoy me on the internet.
Yeah, that's Lacey. Did she fall asleep? We just got grandma just dropped off a new swing. Crazy grandma just dropped off a new swing for Gunther, and she apparently likes it, and she just fell asleep in. Got derailed there. I apologize.
Got derailed like a train full of Republicans.
Oh, that's cold, dude. That's cold. I didn't want to cover that today because I wasn't sure if a Spangle wanted to do that tomorrow or not.
Well, let's not steal his thunder, but I just wanted to make the joke.
Did he put it on the Trello?
No, he did not put it on the Trello board, but it wasn't me the first time he wanted to cover something. He didn't put it on the Trello board. He was just like, oh yeah, by the way, this is also, I want to talk about this. Can we talk about this? I'm just real quick. And I'm looking at him like, it's like, really? Real? Oh, oof. Oh, what is Lacey cooking? Oh, that's hurting my eyes. Alright, so if I start crying, that's why. Also, I posted in the chat the HR 4814 bill. So if you guys need to do that, that'd be... if you guys want to look that over. I'm not going to read this bill. It's not that long. It's only, really 2 pages? It's not that long. We could read.
Well, the problem with these bills, is that they're always like, amend section such so and so of other law with this word. So you have to go pull that one up and go figure out what they're adjusting, and it's kind of annoying that way. Where just to figure out a small 2-page bill, you end up having to pull up 6 different bills or laws that are on the books, right? So just to see what they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. Which that'd be a cool Reinhold TV moment if you just spent like Sunday mornings just reading bills. We should do that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure I would just get so many people wanting to see me read through.
C-SPAN Junkie has all the subscribers, and all he does is redo C-SPAN stuff. Oh, thank you, Farkas Nugent for the 5 bits. Yeah. Yeah, but because that's some of the stuff like Reinhold and I were talking like late last night. It's like, you know, about like the human experience on like learning new things, getting through, so, like, and the ability to change, grow, and walk back things. That's, you know, it's a beautiful thing. We had a very, very beautiful conversation that we should have recorded. And did.
Yeah, I was thinking about that after we how long did we talk? Was it about 4 hours?
Yeah,
5 hours?
4 hours. It was like 1:30 in the morning. I'm like, I need to go to bed. You know. But yeah, let's see. In other news, let's see. I have no bits. I cannot cheer. You'll have to get bits, Chris. You have to farm bits, okay? Gotta get the grinding. Or you can use cash to buy bits, but, you know, that's up to you. But like I said, you can just watch ads and farm bits. I farmed all the way up to 500 bits one time. Took me a while. Took me like, I want to say 5 days to get 500 bits. And I did it to get a... On my other account, Legend of Hans, I did that to get my the Halloween and the holiday bit special emotes, because Twitch will also give you special emotes depending on how many bits you will you give out to, which hopefully our subs will be able to get their Dear Leader emotes. Waiting on that. Gave Dear Leader access to the Twitch channel. I broke my rule in texting a password and texting the two-factor to him. But he got in. Changed. He's been changing things on the Twitch page, so it started to look nice. That's a lot of that is all like Dear Leader stuff. I know. Leave me alone. I needed him to do it, and he wouldn't work with me, and he wouldn't, you know, and he's been busy at work, so I couldn't just go to his job and just put his stuff in the computer for him and walk off. But here, no there. Anyways, sugar cream pie, official pie of Indiana, regardless of what anyone says, that's the pie of Indiana. Anyone else who says differently, they're wrong. Sugar cream pies and tenderloins and corn is the only things you really need to eat in Indiana. Moving on, because there's no discussion of that one. Let's see.
Split banana cream pie, you gotta think about that.
Just give me a good slice of a pecan pie.
Well, someone's getting banned. Pecan pie is disgusting. And this article right here, not really article, it was press released, I'm going to talk about it a little bit, that Escalja brought up right before we got on air, talking about the FDA proposes new risk-based enforcement priorities to protect consumers from potentially harmful, unproven homeopathic drugs. Can you believe that? The FDA is trying to protect us from our homeopathic drugs. So, SKJ, you want to talk about...
Well...
What's up?
No, go ahead, Escalja. You can go into that. I have a few comments, but I'll leave that till then.
Well... You know, I'm going to be the bad libertarian on this, and I'm going to have to say it's about time the FDA did just about anything about homeopathic. Quite frankly, if we're going to have a regulatory agency that is supposed to look at efficacy, mm-hmm. it should actually look at the things being brought onto market and see if they are having any amount of efficacy to them.
And that's not necessarily anti-libertarian. So here's the thing. There are some issues with some homeopathic drugs that are not obvious to a lot of people. So there are some homeopathic drugs that a lot of people take that can cause problems if you're trying to do certain things. Like if you're having a surgery, but if you're taking echinacea, echinacea thins the blood and can cause problems with that surgery. Right, so there are effects that those drugs do have on your body. I am for somebody looking at the efficacy, as you say, of the of these drugs, just so that we know what they do. We know what the positives and the negatives are for that, and they should be putting that information out for everybody. I look at it more like it should be done like the United or the Underwriters Laboratory does, where it's a private organization that is focused on that one role, right? They look at the – so we don't have a governmental body regulating electronic equipment, right? So electronics is a very dangerous thing if you're not careful. Underwriters Laboratory is there, and they test all of those equipments, and people are more comfortable buying things that have been tested by Underwriters Laboratory for that reason.
So
why not have the same thing for drugs, where you have an organization – a non-governmental organization that's focused without politics on the proper understanding of what all these drugs do, both the official prescription drugs and homeopathics and anything else you put in your body for that purpose, putting the information out and letting people make that decision. That's what we should be doing there, not necessarily having it as a governmental organization, which then introduces politics, which then introduces laws that causes more harm in the end than good, in my opinion.
All right. So we got some things from chat. One, but what about my male super vitality? That's from Farkin Newsgan. They also want to know what process do they use to judge efficacy? Echinacea is not homeopathic. How high does the percentage?
Technically it's not. So homeopathic. When they're talking about homeopathic, it's. There's kind of a joke that that Tim mentioned I was talking about last night has made, where it's basically the idea that water has memory, right? So you can put a drop of something and then dilute it, and it retains the memory of what was in it before, but it doesn't apparently retain all the poop that was in that water before. But that's just another thing.
You see, the reason for that is you have to shake it a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Okay. It's magic water.
It's just water. It's all it is.
But yes, echinacea, if I'm not mistaken, is an herbal supplement.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And a lot of people conflate the two. Homeopathic medicine specifically refers to that which they take a sample of, and they dilute it in water. Say you take the smallest drop of water or smallest drop of a substance used in modern medicine is 1/60th of, I believe, of a milliliter. That's it. And if you took that and put it in a sample of water that's that small, and homeopathics does it by diluting it into one part in 100. And a very common preparation is to take that and dilute it in another part in 100. And you do that a certain number of times. It's normally 30 times or 100 times are the two very common preparations. If you take just one droplet and you dilute it that much, though, you're looking at essentially a sphere of water that's 155 light years in diameter, and you're looking for that single droplet of effective substance in that entire sphere. Chemically, homeopathic remedies are water. And I see that we're pulling up the homeopathic Wikipedia page, which is a great Wikipedia entry on it. It has so many sources. But, no. My problem is that the sellers of homeopathic remedies are essentially claiming things in a fraudulent manner.
Yep. Right, they're making claims that they can't prove, right? So they can't, they're not backed up by, you know, actual evidence, lab evidence, testing, that sort of thing. So people believe them, they read it, and they go, oh, this takes care of this, so I'm just going to start taking that, and then they think it's going to work. Now, I have to be careful because my wife is sort of kind of into a little bit of homeopathy, but not nearly as much as she is normal medicine, so that's good. At least she's not gone down the bend that far.
This is not going to affect my glucosamine, right? Right? So, like, my glucosamine is going to be fine. This won't touch my glucosamine.
Well, if you drink water, does it affect your glucosamine?
No. No, I take it with water.
Then it won't.
Okay. What about, just want to make sure I'm okay. So, like, my glucosamine for my
when we talk about the water tables and how there's some radioactive material in the water. Mm-hmm. We talk about how small, minute amount is actually in there compared to the whole of the water that you're drinking. It's kind of the same thing. There's a very tiny amount of this in the actual water. The solution that you're getting is like 99.99999% water with a tiny little bit of something in there. It's effectively not, you know.
Try adding about 100 more zeros.
I'm trying to be a little kind to the field. But it's effectively that you're getting like an atom in that whole bottle. There might be an atom of that material in it. The theory behind it is that the water then retains the memory of that in the water and helps it turn it into the whole thing. It's kind of like turning wine into water, almost.
All right. Let's see. Here in the chats, yep, Jack says homeopathics are nothing. Go on. Let's see. Wicked Kendra, I pretty much believe that most homeopathic remedies are more so a function of mind over body. I take these two drops to feel better. I think I feel better, so I get out and exercise. Endorphins kick in and I actually feel better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, there is a placebo effect to a lot of that. If you study placebo effect, it is actually a real thing, and it is something can be used in science for that purpose, right?
Dookie Twinkle, what about fluoride in our water? How safe are y'all to drink that? Fluoride in the water, you're not safe to drink your fluoride in the water. You should get your filters. Get your filters here at
special wall brand filters.
I should buy some of the fluoride filters that
I use. Excited
and
by the
stack wall stickers on them all. Get them at the wall merch shop. This is what I use. The fluoride in the water. I don't like the fluoride in the water because I don't like the dosage level that they try to sell you that you get, that you're supposed to get with it. And that doesn't affect that. I don't like the idea of bathing in fluoride or cooking with fluoride and watching the exposure to it. But at the same time, I know that it is safe for myself to drink it if I need to. But I still like to filter it out at a certain cases. And the other things that are in the water. Like here in Indiana, we have incredibly hard water here. People filter that, you know, get that filtered out. Or here in Lawrence, we get they use lots of chlorine, because all the time, and we get, you know, so that gets filtered out. So I filter that out, I get the fluoride out, and I try to get water just 0.00 water out. That's, you know, so
there's a filter you can buy. So like the Brita filters, there's a filter you can buy called Zero Water. Mm-hmm. I recommend it wholeheartedly because if you look at what it does, they actually give you a tester for all the for a lot of different chemicals and hard materials that are in your water. Mm-hmm. So you can take tap water, and you'll see how many, you know, how many parts per million it has of some of these materials, and it'll be like 200-300. And you get bottled water, and you can see like 90-100. You filter the tap water or the bottled water through this Zero filter, and then you test it, and it shows zero, right? So it does a really good job of filtering out a lot of these materials. I don't think it's filtering out fluoride So that's another process you're going to have to run through. But this does get like the hard water out, the iron and all the other chemicals that are in there. It makes it basically straight H2O as best as it can.
The majority of water filters, I really don't want to turn this into the water filter show, but what most majority of water filtration will not filter out fluoride. It just won't, because of the shape of it and how small it is. Do you order to get fluoride out of your water, you have to use reverse osmosis. That's it.
Exactly, right.
Nothing else works.
So yeah, because basically the fluoride attaches to the water in a way that you just can't do it with any kind of carboning or or small grain filtering processes, right? So that's more for getting rid of iron and lead deposits, things like that, out of the water. But if you check, that stuff is in bottled water. Bottled water is really nothing more than someone going and filling up tap water and putting it in a bottle.
Unless it is reverse osmosis filtered.
Exactly. And then reverse osmosis of water tastes kind of yank. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I put a little salt in it, if I'm honest. Kosher salt. But yeah, but you can get a reverse osmosis system. Like if I say, five-stage reverse osmosis system, you can get one. If you can fit it underneath your sink, so you can just on demand get freaking tap water, or you can go to like, there's a lot of local companies you can probably go to that does reverse osmosis system. They drop waters off your house, get a little water cooler. It's really nice. Let's see. Don't let the FDA find out your supplement is effective, it won't go away. Here, it's like, yeah. I don't know if my glucosamine is effective. I've been doing it since my MMA days, and I love it. It makes me feel good. It makes my joints stop hurting. The FDA is trying to ban endorphins. Don't forget your essential oils. You know, I always wanted to take an essential oil class. They always talk about it at yoga and really hear about this stuff, you know. Let's see.
My wife does essential oils. She's real big into essential oils, and she loves it. But it's more of a mind mood thing. Like the smells can kind of alter your moods a little bit and make you feel better a certain way that way, which, you know, is reasonable to say. It's a lot more than, you know, it's a lot more reasonable going there than to say the homeopathy works.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I like it too. Especially like when I'm doing yoga, when I am trying to get into the better deeper meditative states. You know, before I did yoga, I could meditate, but finding out that there's other states of meditation, other places, and you can get so deep, and which I didn't know, and which is like, it's, you know, I just learned, I feel like I've just really just scratched the surface on meditation, which, you know, so.
So just a quick question, a little side note. Do you enjoy beat poetry in any way?
The what poetry?
Beat poetry.
I don't know what beat poetry is.
You don't know what beat poetry is? Maybe I'm an older guy. So that's mostly from the 70s, but people still do it. So it's kind of a rhythmic poem. It's almost musical. When I talk about Tim Minchin, he has an animated short called Storm. That's basically a four or 5 minute beat poem, but it's very hilarious, and it touches on a lot of these topics. Because he runs into a woman who's just so like hippie into homeopathy and
new age.
You know, she's way new age, and he's trying to deal with her because he's like, you know, he's very science focused, right? Mm-hmm. And he's talking about, well, don't you believe in natural remedies? And he's like, well, yeah, I just took one today. I had a really bad headache. I took something from the bark of a willow tree. It had a weird name. What was it? Oh yeah, it was called aspirin. You know, I got it for like $4 down at the store. So he's like, do you know what they call alternative medicine? Because alternative medicine is medicine that has either not been proved to work or been proved not to work. What do they call alternative medicine that has been proved to work? Medicine. Right? So it's just a great destruction of some of that new stuff. It's hilarious to listen to. So I recommend it to anybody to watch. It's called Storm. Tim Minchin.
See, I've done that in Scouts with the whole, like, take the bark off the tree to get rid of a headache, or the rub your hands on, like, the get the stuff off the aspen tree, the dust that comes off for, like, natural sunblock. Now, like, I just did it for the badge. I didn't need the sunblock, obviously.
It's racist Scouts organization, isn't it?
There's like four black people. The white people are like, oh yeah, more sunblock. We're like, all right, we know about it. It's like, no, you got to do it to get the badge. you know, got this weird looking one arm.
Well, you might need to save some. You might need to save some white man to protect him. Yeah, you do your civic duty.
Yeah, yes, a whole home filter probably would be a little expensive, but you could probably limit, because there's some things you need to filter, some things you don't. So you can only put the you can put filters where you need it, like your shower, places you drink. But when it comes to where you don't need non-potable water, so like your toilet, washing your hands, those don't need to be filtered out. So, yeah, it could be expensive, but you, as long as you limit to what you want to filter, and it's not that bad, actually. It just gets annoying when you've, like, crap, I've got to change all these filters, which my wife has, like, you know, her skin's very sensitive to it, and she can tell me what the filters are going bad, because she said the water will almost feel like acid to her at that point, so... All right, so I think we've talked this FDA thing a lot longer than I expected to. It's nearly 9 o'clock on this thing. Freaking homeopathy crap. All right. What is this link? Robert Murphy has really...
That was just a link to this.
Hmm? Oh, you linked to
the... Yeah, it was just linked to the storm thing, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Just for anybody who wanted to see it.
The storm thing?
Right. Yeah, it's very funny.
Anybody want to clip that, take Ryan Holt out of context? Yep, you know everyone's going to use that clip of you right out of context. Right out of context. Can't say
right. What are they going to take out of context?
Right, you're linking to that storm thing.
The storm thing, baby.
Yep.
The front of it.
Yep. Or... the front of the storm thing. Thanks, Gunther. Thanks, Gunther. Gunther laughed. The Crown... Alright, so UK prosecutors admit destroying key emails in Julian Assange case. Oh no! Just can't hold on to these emails! What's... emails are so hard to hold on to.
So, do we need to have a class on document retention that people in government have to go through?
I know, right? Can you imagine being a private industry that did like trade deals, right? And you lose emails after some trade or anything.
Or jail time, baby.
Right. You know, or yeah, especially if you're the tech that's like, oh, I'm sorry to retain that. Oh, you know.
I've had to do that for businesses, an IT guy where I've come in and did discovery. Mm-hmm. When they were doing discovery processes for lawsuits and had to go back through old backups of email systems from 10 years before. Mm-hmm. We had to build the old email systems that didn't work anymore and load up all the data and do searches through mm-hmm. certain keywords to pull all that records for them. So they had to do this. So the law is basically that if you have a retention and if you do a backup policy, then you're required to provide it. So there are some companies who will just say our retention policy is we don't keep anything past 2 years, so if you try to come at us for something after that, we have no legal requirement to give it to you.
Right,
so that's how they're getting around that. But mm-hmm. in government, you're supposed to say, I mean, the law in the governments is that they're supposed to save everything no matter what somewhere. They're supposed to store all communications. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how are those systems failing so miserably time and time and time again? You know, either there's some manipulation going on for cover-up purposes or whatever, or mm-hmm. there's some gross incompetence happening in the systems, or failures in the systems that they'd better start addressing, or there's going to be some issues.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it just makes you wonder, like, how could this happen when there's so much, you know, there's so much ability, so much out there that saves so much, like, the hard drives are so much easier to give us warning when a hard drive is going to fail. Ain't they right?
Yeah, there's also a lot of ways to get data off of failed hard drives.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to go through processes destroying hard drives just so that CIA can't get a hold of them and do low-level detection and pull that data back off, right? So you can't just erase it, because erasing it leaves the data there. So you try to do a wipe of it, right? So if you do a zero-level pass on it, they still can get in there and do side channel detection on that data and pull that data off. So you have to multi-pass through there on the overriding of the data. You can't just expect that. Then you need to drill it with drills so you can completely destroy it, which I think is what they were doing in the Hillary case, where they were destroying the hard drives.
Now, when it comes to hard drive deletion, you're right, and you're not all the way there. Like, all right, when it comes to most, the CIA, they can come at it if you only wipe it, do like a one pass zero wipe onto it. You are correct with that. Right. With a enough time, enough tech, you can get it. Now, with a two or a three pass wipe on it, the data is gone on a modern hard drive.
Yeah. But you have to go through that process to delete it in a way that you can never get it back. Even a failed hard drive. So there's a program called SpinWrite that bypasses the... Yeah.
Steve Gibson.
Steve Gibson is the man. Okay, if you want to know anything about security, this guy is the one who figured out how botnets work, and he coined the term botnet. He's a genius. He codes in actual machine language. Most people don't do that anymore. So go listen to him sometime. The
seven pass wipes.
The problem is that
for old hard drives, for new hard drives, seven pass wipes is a little too much. You don't have to do it. You've gone too
right. Yeah. So no especially with solid state, you can really take that down a notch. But the thing is with the spin hard drives is that his tool will actually bypass the OS and do side channeling on that data and get it off there on data that it can't, that normally you couldn't read. He can actually still read those bits and move them off of there in a way that can recover the data off of it on a failed hard drive, because it's never because the way the drives work is you have sectors, and it's not usually the whole sector that's damaged. It's usually part of the sector, so he can read parts of the sector and be able to fill some of that stuff in and be able to pull that data off still with that tool. So, and there's another company called OnTrack. These guys are geniuses at getting data off of failed systems. We had a system where we had a RAID fail, two drives at the same time, which destroyed the RAID, and we couldn't get the data back. We sent it to them. They said they couldn't get the data. We begged them because this was $1 million projects and stuff like that. So they reconfigured their algorithm, and they were able to pull that data off of those failed drives and saved our bacon.
Nice.
So this idea that you can't get that data is gone, I seriously doubt that it's really gone. It's just how much effort and money do you want to put into recovering that data?
Correct, yeah.
Right, but what gets me is that these are lawyers. Lawyers are so ingrained in their head that they have to save everything. Every piece of paper is documented and stored in a filing systems that would make you just you make your head explode trying to figure some of that. The amount of work that they go through in this is what they live for, right? So the fact that lawyers lost this data is kind of telling me.
Something in the chat. All these offside backups, laser tape backups, all this stuff from Farkas Nugent. We can kinder if you have written policy of we don't retain over emails over 12 months, then scot free, at least in the state of Georgia education. Wow, that's 12 months. That's nice.
Yeah,
awesome.
I've seen lower than that on some company that I was working for. They said, "Well, we don't keep anything after 3 months." And I'm like, "How do you get away with that?" I mean,
I know, right?
You know, they said as long as it's your policy that you don't retain that, they can't come after you for it on discovery.
Yeah, Doogie Twinkle, wipe it like a cloth. Yes, wipe hard drives like a cloth. Wicked Kinder, D band boot nuke. Yep, D band or Derek's boot and nuke. It's a very very great system. It wipes drives very very well. It does a very, 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 very good job. Taking your shotgun out back and shooting a hard drive, that data's still there. You want to be able to, you got to be able to store the platters. And perfectly honest, like when I had to destroy a hard drive of stuff that was on it, I ran I did DBAN on it. Before I ran DBAN on it, I encrypted the hard drive. Once I encrypted it, I destroyed the key that I used to to encrypt the hard drive. And then I debanned that hard drive, and then I proceeded to throw it in a chipper, and then mix it with aluminum cans. So all the aluminum got mixed up with all that stuff. So it was fun times.
So here's my point. The point is, though, is that if you have to go through all this effort to really get rid of data, how could they just come and say, "Oh, we lost the data"?
They did. Yeah, I've noticed.
Technically, somewhere.
Yeah.
If they wanted to get it.
Right. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like if the hard drive still exists, that's the thing. Is like, all right, I have wiped for a company I used to work for, we have wiped government-issued hard drives before. And when they come in, they have so many inventory controls on the hard drive in the first place that before we even touched it, so it boggles my mind how this happens. But let's get through the article and stop speculating and going through it. Let's jump into this thing. Okay?
Yep.
The Crown Prosecution Service is facing embarrassment after admitting it destroyed key emails relating to the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange, who is holed up in the Ecuador's London embassy fighting extradition. Email exchanges between the CPS and the Swedish counterparts over the high-profile case were deleted after a lawyer at the UK end retired in 2014. So they retired and they deleted their emails. And CPS is Crown Protection Services, or... All right, so everyone in America, that's what, thinks CPS or something else. The Drexel potentially sensitive revealing information comes ahead of a tribunal hearing in London next week. Adding to the intrigue, it emerged the CPS lawyer involved had advised the Swedes in 2010 or 2011 not to visit London to interview Assange. An interview at that time could have prevented the long-running embassy standoff. The CPS, responding to questions from The Guardian, denied there any legal implication of the data loss of an Assange case. If it were to come to court in the future, asked if the CPS had any idea what was destroyed, a spokeswoman said, "We have no way of knowing the content of email accounts once they have been deleted." Assange, whose WikiLeaks have been involved in a series of controversial leaks that include the Iraq war logs, U.S. State Department cables, Democratic Party emails, and was wanted by Sweden as part of the preliminary investigation into rape allegations, Sweden dropped the investigation in May. Detractors of Assange, who sought refuge in Ecuador's embassy in 2012, accused him of collaborating with Russian propagandists in undermining Hillary Clinton's bid for the presidency and helping Donald Trump secure it. Supporters of Assange fear he could have been extradited to the U.S. from Sweden and might... Dookie Tweakle, thanks for the follow. I thought you followed last time, but I've got enough. All right. Supporters of Assange fear he could have been extradited to the U.S. from Sweden and might yet from the U.K. The U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said this year Assange was a priority for the Justice Department, and U.S. federal prosecutors are believed to consider charges against him over the leaks. The CPS data destruction was disclosed in Freedom of Information or FOIA case being pursued by the Italian journalist Stefan Mario. Mario, a reporter for the Repubblica, has covered WikiLeaks since 2009, has been pressing both the CPS and the Swedish counterparts for information relating to the Assange extradition. Unhappy over the limited material released so far, she is taking her case against the CPS to an information tribunal on Monday and Tuesday. It is incredible to me these records about an ongoing high-profile case have been destroyed. I think they have something to hide, Missouri said. She is keen to establish how much influence the UK had in the decision of the Swedish authorities at the time not to travel to London to interview Assange. She is also looking for evidence of U.S. involvement in extradition moves. She unearthed 2 years ago, through a FOIA request to the Swedish prosecutors, an email from a lawyer in the CPS extradition unit on the 25th of January 2011 saying, "My earlier advice remains that in my view it would not be prudent for the Swedish authorities to try to interview the defendant in the UK." The sentence was redacted in an email obtained by Missouri from the CPS under a FOIA request, but not when it was released under a FOIA request from the Swedish prosecutors. Assange declined to travel to Sweden at that time, and expressing his fear was a ruse that could pave the way for his extradition to the U.S. His lawyers offered a compromise in which Swedish investigators could interview him in person in London or by video link, but the Swedish authorities did not take up on the offer at that time. A legal manager at the CPS, Mohammed Cheman, who has been dealing with the FOIA request, said in lengthy witness statements in August this year that the Assange case file compromises mainly 55 lever arch files, one A4 file, and a selection of other papers. It's a 55 lever arch file. Oh. So it's these gigantic, those big folder things that people see. I'm sorry. Don't be like, hopefully no one's in the comment like, "Oh, you don't know what one of those are." Sorry, I didn't know what an A4 is, and I had to. I figured that out, but now I know, okay? You got hip to your lingo. And it's linked to the paper file. He added it was very unlikely the CPS held further significance email and correspondence. But just 11 days before the hearing, Gemma sent a further statement saying a search of electronic records found data associated with the lawyer who had been in touch with the Swedish prosecutors was deleted when he retired and cannot be recovered. He retired in March 2014. Jennifer Robinson, Doughty Street Chambers barrister and Estelle Donan, who specialize in freedom of information, will be representing Morizuri in the tribunal. Robinson, who has also represented Assange, said the missing information raises concerns about the Crown Prosecution Service's data retention policy and what internal mechanisms are in place to review their conduct on this case in light of the fact that the UK has been found to have breached its internal obligations. A United Nations panel last year found Assange has been arbitrarily detained by the UK and Sweden. Robinson said the CPS has disclosed some material which is very limited. We know there is more, she added. Serious questions must be asked about the role of the CPS. Had the Swedes interviewed Assange back in 2010, one wonders whether the case would have continued for such a long time. The Swedes had interviewed many other people in UK in relation to other cases, Robinson said. We had long been offering the Swedish prosecutors Assange's testimony since October 2010. We didn't know at the time that the CPS was advising them not to take up the offer. The CPS spokesperson, in response to a question from The Guardian why such important documents were destroyed, said the email account was deleted following the retirement in accordance with standard procedure. Asked if it was CPS policy that documents relating to a live court case should be destroyed, the spokesperson said, individual to whom you refer was a lawyer in the CPS extradition unit discussing matters relating to extradition proceedings, which concluded in 2012. The case was, therefore, not live when the email account was deleted. He added, most casework papers and related material are stored for 3 years following the collusion proceedings or for the duration of the convicted and defendant's sentence plus 3 months. In some cases, material may be held longer. Okay. Now. Okay, so. Apparently, so it does kind of feel like that massive cover-up that that you were bringing up about. Or it could just be an honest mistake. Because, granted, right? The person whose email account was, hey, got deleted. He turned off his email account. Boom. And then he just took out the emails. All right? That's like the everyman, like, yeah, that makes sense. But then it's like, well, it's not a live court case, but it is a live court case, but it's... And then you always see these back-channel deals are talking about how the UK government possibly was involved with him trying to get to extradite him over to the Swedes, who were trying to get him back from the U.S., and the U.S. really does want him for the leaks, and the UK government wanted to be able to give him to the United States. So, let's see what we've got here in the chat. Did it with Purdue, I believe it's 12 months. Okay, oof, man. Only 12 months for Purdue's records? Nuts. But honestly, I'm betting it depends on how regulation encumbered your typical email data is tended to be. Universal is only really for FERPA and HIPAA, I think. I don't know what FERPA is. Like for problem is regulations regarding retentions are retarded. I am supposed to save every spam message that was received, even though it was filtered and deleted by a spam filter. Just to... Oh, that's awful. So you have to save the spam? That's disgusting. So the real person behind all the spam emails are hard drive companies. Make you buy new hard drives. It's a smart move. So it looks like what we were discussing before even reading this article, we were kind of right that it does kind of feel like a coverage of people trying to cover someone's butt of trying to get Assange out of the UK and over to Switzerland, then back to the United States, and then to the United States. So, yeah. The only other thing, we're going to move on to the final thing tonight. Krebs on Security. Another good blog. Is that my favorite blog on when I'm talking about... security matters, but it is a good one that I do like reading. My favorite has to be the Avast blog. I love Avast. But But this one has some basic rules for searching, so securing your IoT stuff. Because everyone knows IoT, Internet of Things, or Internet of Targets, because most of the companies that make IoT devices, one, that they go out of business very, very quickly, so you get one patch, possibly maybe one or two updates for it, there's one firmware up there. They're insecure because they're just going to sort of do this thing on Kickstarter, or this is with their one project and they went out of business. Maybe they had full intentions of supporting and updating, but when they went out of business, they did open source the project. I know this is like the bad things about Internet of Things devices. The other bad thing about Internet of Things devices is that it's connected to the internet and it doesn't have a screen, so you don't know what it's doing all the time. And it's not that Internet of Things devices haven't been used in attacks and botnets before in the past. Or, they have used like IoT like webcams as botnets to go attack things. So it's very important that if you have IoT devices that, you do secure these things behind a firewall. And here on Krebs on Security, it does a great job of trying to teach people to secure their things. Oops. I actually went to get ready to paste because I like to read Crypto Compare. IoT equals Pornhub on refresh screens. Yes, you can put that on Pornhub, but don't forget, remember, if you want to search on Pornhub, if you go to the We Are Libertarians on Pornhub, your number one podcast on Pornhub. It's a joke. We're not on Pornhub. I was trying to convince Chris he should upload, but he won't. Let's go through this one. Alright, so rule number one, avoid connecting your devices directly to the internet. Now, this one's a good one. Either without a firewall or in front of it by poking holes in your firewall so you can access them remotely. Putting your device in front of your firewall is generally a bad idea, making many IoT products were simply not designed with security in mind, and manage these things accessible over the public internet could invite attackers into your network. If you have a router, chances are it comes with a built-in firewall. Keep your IoT devices behind the firewall and not in your DMZ. Oh, for the love of crap, don't put them in your DMZ. But even some routers have like terrible patchwork, especially some like Linksys routers. Where's this at? Even the famous blue, that blue one that everyone likes, or even like something like this, right? They have terrible, update things. I think this thing got its last update probably like a year ago, or even at the most. But if you put on DWRT on it, you can get updates all the time on it, or fix things yourself.
Well, isn't there a famous, smart devices that were put out years ago, where they realized that in order to do updates, because the device was secured and encrypted, mm-hmm. but in order to do updates, they needed to unencrypt it. So what they did was, in the update packages, they included the private key in order to unencrypt it, apply the patch, and decrypt it. So if all you do is get a hold of the patch, you had the private key for all those devices. Right?
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That was the stupidest thing ever happened, and they were in trouble at that point. So all of those got owned pretty hard.
Ouch. 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 That's terrible. That's like what happened with the Wi-Fi Pineapple. When that was first, people were start passing those out. They were very trusting. And so when people were turning them on for the first time, they trusted anything that was attaching to it. And people got their pineapples brand new, and they got owned right out of the box. It was disgusting. But yeah, I didn't even think people would put things directly connected to the net, because a lot of IoT devices, people love the aspect of you can see your pet eat your food. You can have an IoT device, food disk, so you can know when your pet ate. Put it this way, if you can get in, if it's punching a hole through your firewall to get in, and it's not a secure session, someone else will find that hole too and get in.
Well, I don't think people realize how much port scanning goes on the internet.
I know. What is
It's funny is there's a website you can go to where they show you this graphic in real time of all the attacks that are going on, and I say attacks in air quotes. And what they're doing is they're just showing you all the different port scans that are happening and all the different, and so they're calling these attacks, but you can see all of the activity that's going on, and people are watching this, and people who don't know what they're talking about or are trying to scare people will bring it, will make YouTube videos showing, well, this is somebody attacking somebody else, and you can see what's going on, and this is all cyber warfare going on behind the scenes. It's like, it's not cyber warfare. This is a bunch of people running port scans because it's fun to do, and people do that, and that's what hackers do, and to find open devices and things that way. So this isn't government cyber warfare, because government cyber warfare, you're not going to detect it nearly as easily as you can just regular random skip kiddies with hacking tools.
Yeah, pretty much. The other thing was, like, I think what a lot of people like to do is, what is my favorite pastime back when I was really young, was to go around and, like, scan for IP cameras. Just to, like,
I remember doing that, yeah. See what you can see on.
Because
those were all open, and you could just get onto that web page if you scanned for that port, and you could just watch all these webcams. That was a fun thing to do about 10 years ago, because people didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's still there. I'm sure there's still people doing it.
My favorite time I ever think I found it with a camera, right? And I found out that it was movable and controllable, right? But the best part about it, right, if you moved it to the left, it would knock over a candle. And this girl would just get off the couch from watching TV. You watch her. She'd pick up the camera, move it back, put the candle back, right? It's like, what's going on? And you're just like, oh, sweet. You just bring it back over and just keep knocking the candle off. That's awesome. Whatever. I was very young and stupid. Leave me alone.
That's how we all learn. We just do stupid things like that.
Yep. Yep. Me. All right, if you change things, default credentials to a complex password, rule number two, if you change the things, default credentials to a complex password, the only you will know and can remember. If you do happen to forget the password, it's not the end of the world. Most devices have a reset switch that can be used to restore things to its factory default setting and credentials. Here's some advice on picking better ones. Here's like a link, you can link that up. If I say if you can at the beginning of rule number two, because of very often IoT devices, particularly security cameras and DVRs, are so poorly designed from a security perspective that even changing the default password to things built-in web interface does nothing to prevent the things from being reachable and vulnerable once connected to the internet. Also, many of the devices are found to have hidden, undocumented backdoor accounts that attackers can use remotely to control the devices. That's why rule number one is so important. That's another thing. Yeah, there's a lot of different times that we found we'd get to some people's cameras, and we find out that a lot of people have changed, like, the default password on it. But we knew that if you typed in the manufacturer into it, you put root as the username and the manufacturer name. So it was like root. I'm not going to say the manufacturer's name. And then underneath it, let me in. It would just let you in.
What was the Apple update here recently that was immediately a huge security flaw? Because if you put the username as root and just hit enter, it would let you in?
Yes. Yeah, that happened about, like, it was like 2.5 months ago.
Yeah. And, you know, that is a security flaw that was baked in by the largest or second largest OS developer in the world.
Yep. Yeah, it was just root, and the manufacturer's name, let me in. It was the backdoor. Which I'm guessing is probably something that they used to build the machine, you know, to test things out, and did not get removed.
Well, that's the same way the Apple one got through, is... You know, you leave a back door for yourself in case your development goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, three steps down the process, who thinks to remember something?
Yep. Let's see. Rule number three, update the firmware. This is really important. Hardware vendors sometimes make it available security updates for the software that powers a consumer's devices, known as firmware. It is a good idea to visit the vendor's website and check for any firmware updates before putting your IoT things to use, and check back periodically for any new updates. So yeah, updates, which rarely does happen, especially to a lot of IoT devices. So because a lot of those things don't last. The rule number four, check the defaults and make sure features you may not want or need, like UPnP, Universal Plug and Play, which could easily poke holes in your firewall without you knowing it, are disabled. Yes, so when the ability to just plug something in and you can just see it across it in, it's so easy. It works automatically. Remember, if it works automatically, that means it's there's some broken code in there. Security holes are abundant in anything that's convenient. Want to know if there's something has poked in your router's firewall? You can use the Senses, which has a decent scanner that may give you clues about any cracks in your firewall. Browse to whatsmyipaddress.com and then cut and paste the resulting address into the text box at senses.io and select IPv4 host and then drop down menu and hit search. All right, I'm not doing that for you guys. You guys can do it on your own time. Or if that sounds too complicated, if your ISP's address or your sensitive backlist, check out Steve Gissen Shields Up page, which I put a link to a GRC in the chat space there. Rule number five, avoid IoT devices that advertise peer-to-peer capabilities. Built-in peer-to-peer IoT devices are notoriously difficult to secure, and research has repeatedly shown that they can be reachable even through a firewall remotely over the internet because they're configured to continuously find ways to connect to a global shared network so that people can access them remotely. For example, for this, see previous stories here included, this was why people fear the Internet of Things and fresh fodder for IoT cannons. Okay. Rule number six, consider the cost. Bear in mind that when it comes to IoT devices, a cheaper is usually not better. There's no direct correlation between price and security, but history has shown us that devices that tended towards the lower end of the price ranges for their class tend to have the most vulnerable backdoors with the least amount of vendor upkeep and support. In the wake of last month's guilty pleas by several individuals who created the Mirai, one of the biggest IoT malware threats ever, the U.S. Justice Department released a series of tips on securing IoT devices. One final note, I realize that the people who probably need to be reading these tips most likely won't ever know they need to care enough to act on them, but at least by taking proactive steps, you can reduce the likelihood that your IoT things will contribute to the global IoT security problem. So it's kind of like herd immunity with vaccines. If you're not vaccinating your IoT devices, you're screwing us all over. Okay? Especially, like, case in point is the Mirai botnet. See. All right, so guys, you want to talk about the my IoT thing, or real quick in the chat? The real question is, what can Congress do to help protect us from IoT devices? I don't really want Congress to try to protect us from the.
Their protections usually are not. I don't want Congress touching anything technology because it's obvious to me that anybody in Congress has zero understanding of technology.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I think that's been proven out over the past 2 years.
I'm sure Farquaad's Nugent is meant it as a satire joke.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he's being satirical there.
Yeah. At least I hope.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that people, and this has always been the case with security, is that people are rushing to get things out. They're going to think of security last. That's what, Steve Gibson will rant about this forever. Mm-hmm. But security is always the last thought. It should always be the first thought, right? So, unfortunately, that's just the way it is. That's why we use C instead of Pascal in a lot of the coding, because C was a lot easier, but it didn't have strict type checking. So people were able to do some things they wanted to get done in code without doing it the harder way, which then introduced the option for introducing bugs that can do overflows, which is where most of the viruses that we've seen over the past 20, 30 years have come from. So if we had had strict type checking on all the coding that we had done over all these years, we wouldn't have this problem. But it's not as expedient. People want to get the product out, and they're in a hurry, so they do it the easiest way. So you have to understand that security is always going to be the last thought on any technology that's out there. So you have to kind of start taking into technology. You have to start thinking technology security yourself, because they're just not going to do it for you.
Exactly. Especially on, you know, those very cheap and expensive devices. You know, that's why I don't like them. I don't trust them. And people are going to find security holes into them, going to punch a hole in it. Like, now, are you safer going with, like, an Alexa? Possibly, because Amazon does a very, very good job of patching their devices. Even, like, some of their older Kindles, they continue to keep getting updates through Amazon. I don't like them, right. Especially, like...
But the problem... The problem with patching is that they're catching the problem after the fact. They're not hitting it before, right? So yeah. If they were doing security stronger ahead of the time, they would have thought about these things before they were discovered.
Correct.
Right. So patching is good. Patching is awesome that when you find an issue, you can get in there and patch it and fix it. Mm-hmm. But if we were taking security seriously enough at the front, they wouldn't have been a problem in the first place.
I'm upset. My little nephew just got fourth place in his robotics competition. Man. But yeah, it's upsetting, but
it's the nature of the way things are. I mean, it's human nature. Yeah.
But
we're trying to put product out before somebody else puts product out, so you can corner the market. So you have to be quick to it, mm-hmm. and it just introduces issues.
Yeah. Well, that's the one benefit, like the Amazon. But the one thing, like the Kindle, I did not like is the simple fact that they did, they put, Alexa on the Kindles, which I used to leave an old Kindle in the bathroom up until I noticed the update that had Alexa on it. Like, oh, thing's got a camera and a microphone on it. This Kindle's leaving the bathroom. And poor people go like, I leave a Kindle in my bathroom. It's my Kindle, and I clean my Kindle like when I clean the toilet, so... It doesn't go anywhere. The Kindle's for the bathroom. I wonder if I can show my nephew doing this, because he's sitting there at his robotic. I want to see. He looks so good. He worked so hard on it, and I feel bad he got fourth place. But better. Honestly, I prefer having fourth place than winning. Winning, he probably wouldn't, probably wouldn't keep asking me for help. If he won, probably tell me he didn't need me.
The real key out of it is he's probably learned a lot about robotics. He's learned a lot about something he might be interested in. Mm-hmm. This is a good thing for him, right? So winning, it's great, but advancing that knowledge and that drive and that desire is the more important thing.
Right? Yeah, that's true. All right, let's see. In the chat, Farkas Dugas, security, documentation, support. The three things always dumped when trying to go on the cheap. That is right, yes. And, because like a lot of different companies, especially like network security people or people doing any type of that type of work, usually the first things to go in most IT departments when they try to save money on the budget, you get rid of the security persons?
It happens all the time, too. I see this a lot. So I do a lot of Active Directory stuff, and mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things in Active Directory you do to secure Active Directory. It's advanced over the years, and people are using Kerberos now instead of NTLM, which is kind of been hacked, and we know that there's flaws in it and we shouldn't be using it anymore. But the problem is that when you have a system you're trying to get up and there's a dependency to get the system running, mm-hmm. and you run into a problem, the first thing you do is say, well, back off the security and we'll see if we can get it to work. Oh, it's working now. Okay, we're good. And they never go to put it back on to try to fix it. And then you go down the line and you're saying, hey, we need to go secure these systems. And like, well, we can't because it'll break this system. So now you have to leave these holes in, and people aren't willing to go through the work that has to be done to find out why the system didn't work to begin with those security problems. So, and the developers then don't want to fix it, and it's a big pain in the rear, because people were interested in, we just need to get this up and running, we don't care. Right. Well, you don't care until that moment that you get hit by a virus that then encrypts every single document on your network, because you're running in an insecure fashion, mm-hmm. and you're out getting hit with multi-million-dollar insurance policies because of that. And now things start getting ugly, right? So it's just the nature of how people operate, unfortunately.
Yep. Because a lot of security people, they always say, like, if a company's their IT staff isn't that large and they're running Active Directory, that it's like that means there's huge security flaws everywhere. It's like this. Let's say they used to tell you, like, you have the easiest time getting in. I was like, what? It's like they're using Active Directory and their system, and their staff's not big. There's no one watching it. and the security's probably crap on it.
Right. I mean, because there's just things that there's normal everyday things that you should be doing to maintain that, maintain security in an Active Directory environment.
Yeah.
It's just the question of, are the people who are running it doing that? Are they, because people are like, oh, Active Directory is simple. You can just set it up and you don't have to be an Active Directory guy in order to get it up and running and utilize it, which is great. But now you centralize all your user account information. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have somebody watching that and making sure that it is protected properly, you've got a very big attack vector that people will try to hit.
Oh, yes. That's just a very, very sweet, 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 sweet spot. Which, like, yeah, I get that, too. Like, I can write, you know, like, Cisco ASA, like, firewall. I love it. But I tell anyone who I write one for, like, hey, you might want to let someone look at this because I've looked up this thing, you know, for hours, and it looks good to me. So you should probably have someone else look at it. All right. So in the chat, we were talking about, like, robot fighting. Nuclex, apparently Jack's kids didn't have enough people to do robot fighting in their class, which does stink. And I was, you know, stating, like, we, you know, and Farkinus and everyone's talking about we need to, like, show more kids robot fighting. Yes, I think robot fighting should, you know, that's what got me into kind of, like, liking, like, some robots. I don't do much in robotics, just kind of, like, tinker. You know, I'm not a robotics person, but I can read a book, knows how to move different things, and get things going, and I like the idea of robot fight. Ooh, man, that came out of nowhere. Alright.
Well, I remember when I was growing up, we had things, we had an Erector sets, right? And the Erector sets back in the day when they first started were very freeform. Mm-hmm. Like, they give you a little generator, and you can put a 9-volt battery on it, and that generator would turn, you know, spin. And not a generator, but a, you know, just a mechanical. I can't think of the name of it right now. My mind is blank. But it would spin things, right? So you could do winches and things like that, and you could start playing with that automation stuff. Now the toys that are coming out are a lot more kind of locked in what you can do, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of just missed that because we as kids would just find all kinds of weird things to do with these. With these sets, and we just need more of that. So the robot stuff really helps in that area, I think.
Yeah, magnetics, that's all the magnetic stuff. That was all kinds of different, really cool, fun stuff. And
well, I used to go to Radio Shack. I don't remember. It says they're not there anymore, but I think most of them are closed down now. But you used to be able to go into Radio Shack, not to go in and get, you know, cell phones and TVs and radios. You go into the back where all the transistors and the circuit boards and the breadboards and soldering irons and all that stuff. We would build our own electronic sets and with breadboards and test them out and see how they'd work. It was the thing we used to do when I first went to college. There was an electronics department, and I was in on the computer side, but the electronics guys and I would hang out, and they'd do all these circuits with breadboards and things like that. It was so much fun. To kind of build your own radio, build your own, you know, walkie-talkie devices and that sort of thing. And I just don't see that happening a lot anymore with those stores kind of failing and going out of business because nobody was doing that anymore. Because people just go buy the stuff now. They never made it, you know.
Yep. Like, because even when I was coming, like, making, like, your... We didn't get to. I never get to do the. It was the kits we could get. We could get kits like this is a phone in a box. Use the electronics and your soldering iron, and you will build a phone. Use the stuff in the box, and you can build a walkie-talkie. Sounding like the idea of like just going to the back of a store is just having to get boards to build a walkie-talkie sounds amazing, and I wish I could have done that as a kid. That sounds awesome. Right now, as an adult, like this still sounds fun, but like incredibly easy to do.
Right. I mean,
harder, remember, more I was, difficult as a kid, we were like a lot more fun.
14. Yeah, we were like 14, 15, and we were just trawling through the Radio Shacks and finding just all the different transistors and resistors and all that stuff. It was just an amazing time, I thought, when I was growing up that way. It just seems more sanitized now to me. Yeah. And maybe I'm just missing it. I'm not seeing, you know, what's going on, but it just seems that way now.
It's okay. I had a lot of old techs around me growing up, and they watched me when I got my phone in a box that I had to build at. So, like, I'm building my own phone. They expect me to, you know, I literally went and got stuff, but they saw the kit and the instruction book that I was going off, and, like, you're not building your own phone. You know, because then I wasn't really building my own phone, which was, like, you know, I did have a lot of fun on that thing. All right.
Well, I remember when I was, I had to be like 12, 13 years old, maybe a little bit older, and we used to have some old TVs, right? So the old tube TVs.
Yes.
With vacuum tubes and everything in it. Mm-hmm. We had one that didn't work. And I'm like, well, what the heck? So I just started playing around in the back of it. I had it plugged in, not knowing what I'm doing, with a screwdriver, and I touched a couple things together.
Yeah.
Right. Created a spark, which could have killed me. but from that moment forward, that TV worked.
Wow.
So I don't know. I never did figure out what I did, but I apparently shorted across something that was broken and bypassed it, so the TV would then start working again. So just gotta be careful with electronics. But yeah, that was some fun stuff that I did.
Gotta understand electricity, because it can and will kill you, or give you some nerve damage. You know. All right. Yeah. All right. So, I'm not staying on to watch this thing on BET. Like I said, I do it for 1,000 bits. We didn't get that, which is I'm okay with, because no one wants to stay up and watch me watch BET. Totally okay. But we did talk about some cool things. We did have a lot of fun. Let's start wrapping up. Let's start with Reinhold. Reinhold, you want to wrap up? Got anything you want to wrap up on? Plug your stuff.
Just know if you want to follow me on Twitch. My handle is Reinhold TV. On Twitter, it's at Reinhold for anything political, and at Reinhold TV for anything gaming or media related. And Reinhold.org for my website.
Escalgia.
Yeah.
You want to wrap up?
So. Yeah, I am getting into the streaming game myself here. My channel is Asculja Plays, with an underscore in between the two. And I will be... I do have one video up now where me and my roommate complain about Fortnite while being very bad at Fortnite. And the other thing I have to plug is, of course... every Friday evening at the Triton Brewhouse, we will be having Liberty and Chill presented by Wall, and we are looking forward to seeing a lot of people there this weekend.
Yep, this Friday, yep. And please RSVP so I know how big to get the table.
Yeah, we definitely outgrew our table very quickly last Friday. Yep.
Right. Anything else?
That's all I have.
Like I said, like Liberty and Chill this Friday. I'm going to try to get with Paul sometime to like really hammer out the things to try so we can get these other locations going up. We've got to find some time. It's mostly me. It's hard for me to get free right now. I've got my ITOL exam next week, so I've been studying for that. So I've really had that much free time besides doing this, so I've got to get that. So Paul's basically just waiting on me, which is, like I said, it's my fault. ITIL's kicking my butt more than I thought it would. Let's see. Other than that, get Liberty Chill. We're going to do our IRL stream on Friday. We're doing also Wall Gaming on Friday night. So, like, if you're out on the Discord, jump in the Discord, come Wall Game with us. We're doing some PC gaming. If Spangle will let me steal off the Blackmagic capture card box, I will probably try to. I will play old retro console games. Old retro console games. I have no problem doing that if he let me steal off the Blackmagic capture stuff. ITIL, it's the Information Technology Library. It's a framework. It's not a project management server. ITIL is not project management. It's close to project management, but it's not. It's more of the business side of IT. It talks about how to creating services, service design, service management, and service improvement. Yeah, for my background in IT, it's good for me because I've done a lot of IT operations, all IT management stuff more than I have done, like worked in like dredged in servers. So for my aspect, I might as well just keep going on this type of general IT aspect of it than trying to get heavy into servers right now, because I just don't have that much experience. Like, I'm so min-maxed on networking and the operational side of management of an IT department that I'm just going to concentrate. So I'm just going to keep going on those paths, on those two forks, and just go all the way. So that's my plan, anyways. So, like you said, thank you, everybody. Look, I think I actually went offline. I think it stopped. We are offline. Which stinks.
Cool. I missed my smiley face at the end of the comment, but yeah, I was just being facetious.